You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll hear how advocates are mobilizing to monitor and encourage voter participation among care facility residents.
Everybody started looking forward to the voting, the upcoming November vote, you know, starting, say, in August. And it weighed heavily on the minds of not just residents and their families and advocates, but politicians too, because this election in particular, probably above all other things, is a referendum on how well we are handling a public health crisis, which has been a catastrophe for people who live in long-term care.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic.
Civic is underwritten in part by the San Francisco Foundation, which has been acting as a catalyst for change to build strong communities, foster civic leadership, and promote philanthropy in the San Francisco Bay Area since 1948. More at sff.org.
The coronavirus pandemic has totally transformed the elections, and for people who live in residential care facilities, like nursing homes, for example, that may be creating barriers to participation. Senior facilities have in the past often been used as polling places, making it easy for residents to vote. But since seniors are high risk, that's changing this year. For group home and nursing facility residents, voting by mail may be familiar or easy, or it may present barriers to access. Last week, organizers with Senior and Disability Action called together advocates and experts to lay out what rights these residents have and how to ensure that they're able to exercise them. Today, we're going to bring you some highlights from those presentations. Mike Dark is an attorney with California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. He described how dramatically the coronavirus pandemic has influenced voting access for care facility residents.
I thought what I would do is try to just sort of set the table a little bit based not only on some of the voting issues that we're seeing playing out now in California, but importantly on things that were going on in long-term care in California before COVID and before this vote came up, that kind of set the stage for some of the things that are going awry right now. And it's kind of useful to start out thinking a little bit about that pre-COVID world of whatever 150 years ago, if we can remember it, and how voting used to work back then, especially in long-term care. And P.S., when I'm talking about long-term care, I am focusing principally on skilled nursing facilities and on assisted living facilities, which is also called residential care for the elderly in California. There are also obviously many other types of long-term care in which residents may be affected by many of these same issues, but this is kind of my wheelhouse, and so it's where I'm going to start out with. So before COVID, what we had going on was that many long-term care facilities, both nursing homes and RCFEs, a lot of them were polling places, and a lot of them made it easy, for example, for residents who are ambulatory to go to polling places. If they weren't in the facility themselves, they could go across the street to a church, or to a library, go cast their ballot there. Many residents in long-term care didn't then and still don't have the facilities where they're living and getting care as their address for getting their ballot, for getting a mail-in ballot. And so before COVID, it was no big deal. You call up your friend or your family member and you say, go to mom's house or go to my house or go to my brother's house and bring me my ballot. You could also say, if you had any disabilities or cognitive impairments or just needed assistance with a ballot, you could have someone come into the facility to help you out. And so, you know, while it wasn't as easy in some ways as voting if you were outside a facility, it wasn't so very different. And this is where COVID really changed the story in lots of ways. And you'll all remember that when COVID really first broke in March, what happened was throughout the country, nursing facilities, acute care facilities rolled out restrictions that you'd have to grant were kind of well-intended in that they were trying to prevent the virus from getting into facilities where people were very vulnerable. And there's no question that in principle is a good idea. But what happened practically was that many of those restrictions were very draconian. And they would say absolutely no visitors under any circumstances, even people who were providing care previously. They would say things like, you can't leave facilities and expect to go back because maybe you'll be bringing the virus with you. And what that precipitated over the period of some months and a lot of fighting was sort of a softening, an evolution in those standards, so that where we are now is that you have a state and federal authorities both permitting visitation, even in facilities where there is COVID, and especially in facilities where there is not COVID, but basically making it theoretically legally possible for visitors to go in, and theoretically legally possible for residents of facilities to go out. And that sounds great, right? So we win. Not so fast. What's complicated is that even though we have those rules now, and there's a lot of rules, is that lots of facilities do not obey them. And that's happening for a variety of reasons. One problem is that you have sometimes conflicting authorities between, you know, county departments of public health saying one thing, state departments of public health saying something else, the federal CMS saying something still different. And facilities will say, well, we're just trying to do the right thing, and we're not sure whose rules we're supposed to be following. Those are the innocent explanations. And there's the less innocent explanations where they just said, we don't care what the rules are. We've decided that not letting visitors in is the right way to go. And who's going to stop us? And so that's actually where we are now in California, probably in a lot of the country, where you have pretty reasonably good new regulations, but you have poor, spotty compliance and poor enforcement. And by that, I mean, if facilities aren't following the rules and someone goes to the state and complains and says, hey, how come they're not following the rules? The state doesn't necessarily act quickly to do anything about it. That kind of is the landscape before we ever got to voting. So everybody started looking forward to the voting, the upcoming November vote, you know, starting, say, in August. And it weighed heavily on the minds of not just residents and their families and advocates, but politicians too, because this election in particular, probably above all other things, is a referendum on how well we are handling a public health crisis, which has been a catastrophe for people who live in long-term care. And so the right of people who live in long-term care to vote on those issues is especially important to protect. The problem that we have now is, so we've also got pretty good new rules on voting after a lot of pain. And just looking at California, we have 1,200 skilled nursing facilities in California. We have almost 8,000 residential care facilities, also called assisted living facilities, in California. So we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people whose votes may be affected by these visitation and voting rules that we're discussing today. So there's an enormous amount at stake. What happened is the different agencies that are in charge of oversight of the different skilled nursing facilities, assisted living facilities, and so on, started to issue rules under pressure by organizations like the ones on this call to try to ensure that people living in long-term care could vote, could exercise their right to vote. And so the best of that work is the memo that's been issued by the feds, by CMS, which specifically says that facilities, these are nursing facilities, which is what CMS oversees, should provide residents with assistance completing a ballot, including, and this is really important, an agent, a person of the resident's choosing. This could be a family member. This could be an ombudsman. This could be someone working at the nursing home. So that's good, right? It's very, very protective of resident rights. We've got California Department of Public Health issuing its rule, which is not as strong as the CMS, but does provide a sort of a good recitation of the different rights that residents of nursing homes have, including the right to get assistance in completing a ballot, including the right to go to a polling place. And finally, the Department of Social Services in California, which oversees assisted living facilities, and their version too, does a reasonable job of sort of saying what rights residents have and sort of saying that they shouldn't be infringed upon. Here's what none of these rules do. None of these rules grapple with the conflict that will happen between these rights to have an assistant come in, to go out maybe to a polling place, and what we're seeing in terms of these visitation restrictions. Because the reality on the ground in California, like I said, is that many facilities are still allowing no visitors. Many facilities are doing things like locking people out, meaning, okay, resident, if you want to go across the street to the library, you can, but you can't come back in, we'll lock the door because you might have COVID. So the problem is, how do you reconcile these rights, which are acknowledged in the CMS statement, in the CalDPH statement, in the DSS statement, and this, that what's actually going on the ground in terms of facilities permitting adequate visitation, permitting people to go out. And the fear that I have is that there is so little time between now and the election that the normal complaint and administrative processes for resolving conflicts like this, you write a complaint, it goes to the agency investigates it. Maybe they send an investigator to the facility to interview people. That will take months, and we have only weeks. And so how do we ensure that if conflicts like this exist or will come to exist, that they can be resolved in time to protect the rights of residents to vote? What I'm suggesting to residents that I talk to is you have now a bunch of different rules that are very helpful for different kinds of facilities. Show them to the facility administrator and say, are you following these rules? Will you let me have an authorized representative come in to assist me, for example? But do it now. Do it very soon, like in the next few days, so that if they say no, we can try to get the regulators to resolve the conflict in time for people to be able to go out and vote during the election or to send in their mail-in ballot.
That was Mike Dark with California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. Next, we'll hear from Susan Meisner, who directs the ACLU's Disability Rights Program, about the rights that care facility residents have when it comes to voting and getting help to do so.
In the past, people in nursing homes and other congregate settings were able to vote more easily because polling places were located in many, many of the congregate settings. Because the Help America Vote Act requires every polling place to have an accessible voting machine, they were on site for people who had what we call print disabilities, disabilities that involve not being able to read or manipulate print. You're either blind or you're have manual dexterity issues and can't mark your ballots. Accessible voting machines allow you to do that much more easily. And for those who needed assistance, even with an accessible voting machine there, the League of Women Voters and other groups went to congregate settings to assist people or offer their assistance if they wanted it. As Mike has pointed out, now because of COVID, all of these places are locked down and absentee or mail-in ballots are the primary mechanism that people are going to be used to vote. And absentee ballots are paper ballots. They are not particularly accessible. There are 1.3 million people in nursing homes, another about 800,000 people in other congregate settings around the country that receive Medicaid or Medicare funding. And many of these people will not be able to cast a ballot privately and independently. the goal that we had at the ACLU and with a bunch of disability rights groups, including the National Disability Rights Network, was to make sure that the federal government alerted nursing homes to their obligations in other congregate settings, to their obligations to assist their residents to register to vote and to be able to choose whom they wanted to get assistance from if they needed it. So just to give you some legal background, the Voting Rights Act, one of our oldest voting rights laws, specifically specifies that any voter who needs assistance because of a disability may be given assistance by a person of the voter's choice. And they've got a caveat that it can't be the voter's employer or agent or the employer or agent of the voter's union because of concerns about coercion there. There's also support from the Americans with Disabilities Act, Titles II and III, covered entities that include state and local governments and private and publicly funded nursing homes or other congregate settings must provide reasonable modifications in order to provide people with disabilities an equal opportunity to participate. And that includes registering to vote and casting a ballot. And finally, there's also a section in the Code of Federal Regulations that speaks specifically to the rights of residents in long-term care facilities, that not only must they be free of interference and coercion, but the facility staff, the facility itself, must support the individual in exercising his or her rights, which includes the right to vote. So, summary, what do all of these laws mean? We're very clear that residents in Medicaid and Medicare-funded facilities, I think also in veterans facilities, have the right to choose whom they would like to help them vote. And that right includes having someone from outside the facility come in to vote, as long as they follow proper infection protocols. It also means that facilities have an affirmative obligation to help residents who wish to vote. And they should help them in registering to vote, in whatever mechanisms of help they need in terms of getting their ballot filled out and sent in. And for the few residents who might actually want to go to the polls, getting to the polls. So how do we realize these laws? I just started writing these slides once I heard Mike was hoping for answers from me. The American Bar Association has a very clear standard, which we support, of who should be able to vote. And that's any voter who expresses a desire to vote. Voter means someone over 18, US citizen, otherwise eligible to vote. If they express a desire to vote with or without reasonable modifications or accommodations, should be given the opportunity to vote. And here, the with or without reasonable modifications modifies both the desire to vote, if they express this through assisted communication technology, through sign language, through motioning, and whatever way that they've expressed their desire to vote, and how they vote also needs to be provided reasonable modifications if they need assistance. I would say that we should also be asking, in addition to Michael's questions, we should also be asking residents if they would like to vote. We should be asking nursing facilities, have you gone to every resident in the facility and asked them whether they would like to vote? Have you helped every one of those who want to vote to register? And what are you doing to ensure that if they need assistance, they're getting assistance from someone they choose and that they trust? Election hotlines are one avenue if we are hearing of problems. The 866 Our Vote is a huge, broad election hotline. It's people are trying to staff really well, thoroughly. I think it's 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And would be your first stop for people who are English speakers. But I've also listed hotlines for people who speak other languages, and then the ARCS voter support service for people who may have intellectual disabilities.
That was Susan Meisner from the ACLU's Disability Rights Program. Now, here are some remarks from Michelle Bishop, who works on voter access and engagement with the National Disability Rights Network. She highlighted the racial and disability justice aspects of this issue.
You have the right to vote, even in your if you're in an institutional setting, unless you have been found through a court to be incompetent to vote, which in California is a more difficult process than it is in many other states. These are voters who have the right to vote. They have the federal right to the assistant of their choice, and the institutions and residential and long-term care facilities in which they're living have a very real obligation to ensure that they have access to the vote. And that does mean asking residents if they want to vote. That does mean making sure that absentee ballots that show up in the mail are delivered in a timely manner to those voters, assisting voters to fill them out if they want your assistance, and making sure those ballots are returned in a timely manner, which we know doesn't always happen in these types of settings. This is something we're really concerned about in 2020, the COVID-19 election, because as you heard from some of the other speakers, we traditionally have a lot of ways of getting around some of the problems with helping people to vote who live in long-term care facilities, like having polling places situated in these types of settings, because they're, well, actually usually fairly accessible, even for people who live in the surrounding community who are going to go to vote there. But it means that for the residents, all you typically have to do is get to the lobby, and there's going to be an accessible voting machine there for you and poll workers there to assist you. We also typically have programs where county elections officials go into these types of facilities to make sure that the residents who are eligible and want to vote get a ballot, to help them complete it, to return it for them. That is still happening in some places, but we know that it's not happening this year in others because of COVID-19. So it's really critical that we're paying attention to these issues and we're making sure that residents are able to vote. And I want to just say, make no mistake about it, this is absolutely a civil rights issue. When we talk about access to the vote and the right to vote, it's very much that important. But when we're talking about people who live, particularly in long-term care and residential facilities, this is inevitably a disability justice issue. We are by far talking about people who have disabilities. They may not identify that way, as we know very often when we acquire disabilities later in life, we just call it, and I'm going to put finger quotes on this, getting older. I don't see as well as I used to. I don't hear as well as I used to. My hands aren't as steady as they used to be. What we're talking about is people with disabilities, people who have access needs. We're talking about a disability justice issue in the way that we administer our elections. We're also very much talking about racial and ethnic justice. We know that the percentage of racial minorities in long-term care facilities, in nursing homes, and residential facilities has been increasing for at least the last decade. There are a significant percentage of residents in residential facilities who are Black, Latinx, American Indian, Alaskan Native, Asian American. This is very much a racial justice issue when we look at access to voting in these types of facilities. And it's also an economic justice issue. A large percentage of these residents are people who, for one reason or another, don't have access to another type of care. Maybe the Medicare, Medicaid system has shuffled them into a facility. They don't have family members who can afford to support them at home. So we're talking about disability justice, racial and ethnic justice, economic justice. These are core civil rights issues. And we're talking about the voices of those voters being heard in this election. And in particular, when we talk about these types of facilities, we're talking about a type of voter who's already experiencing lower social engagement. By the nature of living in a residential facility, these voters are less integrated into the broader community. And we know there's a very real correlation between your integration into your community and your likelihood to vote. People who live, work, and play out in the community are more likely to express that citizenship on election day than someone who lives in any type of institution or long-term care facility. So there's already reduced social engagement. And to put an even finer point on that, we know that there is lower social engagement among racial minorities who live in these facilities. To again, just stress the intersection of disability justice and racial justice when we talk about access to the vote in long-term care facilities. There's also lower engagement with political campaigns, political parties, and get out the vote campaigns. They are geared toward people who are living in the community. They're geared towards students who live on college campuses. They are not geared towards people who live in nursing homes or any type of residential facility or institution. So not only are they less likely to be experiencing full social engagement with their community, but they're being excluded from get out the vote efforts that would not only encourage them to vote, but ensure that they have access to the ballot. Those get out the vote campaigns are usually an crucial measure in ensuring that people are aware of deadlines to register or apply for a mail-in ballot, of making sure people have rides to the polls. And people who live in long-term care facilities are largely excluded from those efforts. So it's really important that we as a community, and I'm talking about people with disabilities, advocates, service providers, are filling in that gap and ensuring that people who live in long-term care facilities are receiving that contact. Someone has talked to them about how important their vote is, made sure they know all the important deadlines, asked them if they need help registering, applying for a ballot, whatever it may be, because we can't rely on them getting those contacts elsewhere. The last thing that I'll say in regard to that is that this is also the COVID-19 election. And when we talk about people who are living in residential facilities, we are largely talking about people who are at the highest risk for complications related to COVID-19. These are the folks who we often call the most vulnerable when we listen to news coverage about COVID-19. These are the people who are relying most on their elected officials to help us to navigate this pandemic, keep them and their loved ones safe. They are relying on whoever will win these state, local, and federal elections to keep them safe from COVID-19. It's critical that their voices are heard now more than ever before.
That was Michelle Bishop with the National Disability Rights Network. These were some highlights from a recent virtual event from Senior and Disability Action. You can find more information and links to a full recording at sda.org. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic.
Civic is a production of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative news organization, sfpublicpress.org. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Additional themes from the Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening.
Civic is underwritten in part by the San Francisco Foundation, which has been acting as a catalyst for change to build strong communities, foster civic leadership, and promote philanthropy in the San Francisco Bay Area since 1948. More at sff.org.